I had to get my tickets booked. So one friend of mine's, he took me around. And it was just around that time that the Indians began to get agencies, air agencies. Before that they didn't have that. So anyway, he took me to one agency, and there was a woman that was attending to us. So in the office you'll have the person's name as well. This is the saleswoman, see? So I saw it as a Muslim name. No scarf on the head and no ijar she's wearing. So I told my friend, you know, it seems very strange. The Muslim woman, no scarf on the head, no ijar she's wearing. And over and above, today is a Friday. Where's the respect for this day? And where's the respect for herself? She doesn't have a respect for herself and no respect for the day. So this friend of mine was a little bit of a loose cannon, you see. So he went and told Ado, this is Murad is saying, Friday was respect. How can you dress up like this? So she got tipped off. Like how you say, she just flipped. So she says to me, okay, you know, I know what is tariqat, I know what is haqiqat. What you know about tariqat and haqiqat? And my sheikh has got so much of trust in me that he gave me ijazat. And he gave me his whole jubbah and everything, you know. I got that type of contact. So I thought to myself, now it's pointless discussing this. Because she doesn't understand this, number one. And whoever is guiding her has misled her. Because of multiple reasons. One is, she doesn't know what is tariqat, haqiqat, etc. And number two is, she doesn't realize that the tariqat can't work without shariat. Like, to practice shariat without tariqat is also difficult, but definitely tariqat can't work without shariat. So she doesn't understand what all this is about. She must have felt that there are certain feelings, you must go through certain feelings. And you get those feelings, then you are in tariqat. Or she must have felt that the sheikh must just bless you. You get that group as well, who feel that everything is just a chance. You know, you just catch a jackpot and everything just works out for you. I was once walking on this road here, around the 70s, walking on this road here. So there was one Qari Sahib, so-called Qari Sahib, and he was accompanying me. So casual, I was quite young, and that Qari Sahib, I knew him. So I told him, Qari Sahib, you know, it'll be good if you can come for Fajr namaz at least. So he also got very annoyed. He says, you know, me, when I hear that Qawwali songs, you know, then my soul is in Madina Munawwara front of the Ruz-e Mubarak. So now, what is this? They misconstrued the whole thing. They feel that feeling, you know, that feeling that you are in the presence of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam or in the Ruz-e Mubarak, that is real deen. And then he tells me, see, Jannat is just a chance, like a lucky packet, you know, it's a jackpot. You catch the jackpot and you get to Jannat. You know. So I thought, no, I think, let me take a chance. This is a man, I can speak to him. That one there was a woman, a breakhead with a woman in an office. Other people want to come just now and say, why are you fighting with this woman? So I left that one. This one, I said, let me take a chance. So I told her, Qari Sahib, see, you know, you say that Jannat is a jackpot, lucky packet, you may just get it. So there's so many kitabs that are written just on the virtues and the significance of actions. You do this, then you get this sawab. You do this, and you get Jannat. You don't do this, then you get Jahannam, you know. So all these people that are writing kitabs where they're cutting grass, where they're wasting their time. And if they were not wasting their time, then what was the need for them to write this kitab? Okay, you know, you do this, then you'll get this salab. And you don't do this, and you'll be punished like this. So there is a connection between the deed and the reward. A deed and the reward or punishment, there is a connection. If you see there's no connection, it's just a luck, you know, then they were wasting time writing the kitabs. There is a genuine connection between the deed and the reward. Moreover, in the words of Imam Thani Rahmatullah Alayh, people that go off moreover, be ilmi ki wajah se nahi, lekin naqis ilm ki wajah se, is not because of being total illiterate, no, but because their knowledge is deficient. It's either deficient or it's either they have a misunderstanding of the knowledge. They don't understand it in perspective, or the knowledge is deficient. So this is the reason why they go off. They haven't understood that knowledge in perspective, or their knowledge is deficient. They haven't understood it completely, holistically. They haven't learned. They've got one thing, and they think that they've got the entire knowledge. Like one monkey, I think, found one packet of chili powder. So it said, oh, from today, I'm a supermarket also. A supermarket with all these things, you know, sugar, groceries, everything, or all departments, you see. So I think it was one packet, and it felt, now I'm qualified now, I can run as a supermarket. So now this is what happens to that person. He's got a little bit of knowledge, and then he feels that he is an expert in deen, and he's qualified to talk, he's qualified to give judgments, he's qualified to give talks and bayans on deen. So now this is the deficient knowledge. The deficient knowledge, that ends up in disaster. One person was sick, you see. So someone brought one big black snake to him. Take this thing here. He got a shock. He was sick, now he's getting better, he's running. But what happened? You know, I'm sick as it is, and so what you're doing to me. So he says, didn't you hear, there's a hadith which says, Al-hayyatu sawda shifa'un min kulli da'. See, in the old days, when they used to write kitabs, then they won't write the nuktas, you see. You know, like, initially, there wasn't even the zabar zairs. And before that, there wasn't even nuktas. So they relied upon the readers. The readers were so brilliant that they knew what comes here. Is one nukta here, two nuktas here, how it is, you know. And they relied upon them for the zabar zairs as well, you know, the vowelings. They relied upon them. These people will be able to work out the zabar zairs. But then, with the passage of time, they understood that people are very, very backwards. So they'll need zabar zairs, and they'll need nuktas as well. So there was no nukta on the second word. One is ha, and the next word coming around like that, you know, half a circle. So there was no nukta there. It was supposed to be habbatu soda, you know, the black seed. You know, they say kulunji. Eh? So he misread the thing. Instead of one nukta, he put two nuktas. It became hayya. Habba is a seed, and hayya is a snake. Right? So he misread the thing, and he said, al-hayyatu soda shifa min kulli da. That a black snake is a cure from every illness. See? You see, even in the worldly sense, even in the worldly sense, that Neem Hakim, a few little books of medicine he learned, or he read 1-2 years However, he learnt it on his own or under someone's tutorship, but he learnt it of his own. And then he wants to practice medicine. So what will he say? Then he's going to be a disaster. He's going to kill people, right? You don't give him a license to practice. Right? If he wants to practice, then they will charge him, they will stop him, they will sue him. You don't have the license, you don't have the qualification for this. So that is a person that is Nim Hakim. See, he's not a qualified person. So what happens, sometimes you learn one, two books, three books, one something, and then you want to give an opinion on everything. Oh, I know it, I'll fix it up. The better thing is what you know, you are 100% sure, then you take it on. But you're not 100% sure, say, no, I don't know this. I need to learn this. Now, that person is a true person. But the person knows everything, then he's a chancer, he's a suspect. And this, like I say, it happens in deen, it happens in dunya things as well. Like you see now, in dunya things where the person is not qualified and it creates a problem. In Stuttgart, you see one big, big building, big slab, the thing just collapsed, right? There were people under it that all would have died. But now it's an engineer's fault. Okay, he didn't have that sense of responsibility. He was not such a genuine person. That whole slab, you know, it was a big, big slab. I think it was over 300-400 meters. Such a big, long slab. And that whole thing just went down. Imagine if the people, what would have happened? Right? So now this is a sense, it's an indication that that person is not qualified, he's not genuine, he's deficient in what he's doing. So this deficiency sometimes is in a worldly sense. And sometimes it is in a dini sense. And in a dini sense it's even worse than if it was in a dunya sense. Dunya sense, alright, life will go. But here iman will go. There the person's life may go, and here this person's iman may go. And it becomes more complicated in deen, because in deen there is no proper checks and balances on an official level. See, like in dunya things, on an official level there is a check and balance. Like you find there's a milk board, there's an accountants board, there's a medicine board. There is some checks and balance, they maintain some standards. Right? But in deen, is there any check and balance? There's no checks and balance. Yeah, there is a check and balance. There is some standard, right? So, like accountants will have to go every year, and they will have to get that amount of points. And the board will see now this person, is he still capable? Can he manage the things or not? But here now, is there anybody to check on them? That are they maintaining it? Are they sustaining it? Are they of that level or not? There's nobody to do it. And nobody to do it. In the meanwhile, the man is taking a chance. When he's taking a chance, so he's taking a chance with the person's deen. And he can destroy that person's deen after that, obviously. So this comes as a result of deficient knowledge. And then very seldom you have a person coming up to own up, I am deficient. So don't ask me, I don't know it. Very seldom you'll have that. Very, very seldom you have it. Because nobody wants to seem to be a failure in life. You don't want to appear to be a failure. You want to be a champion, you want to be a hero all the time. I know everything. Right? But to be a failure, I don't want that to be. So therefore I say in deen, it's even more dangerous. And that is why you get so much of complications in this day. Right? That anybody knows a little bit, though he's a Molana, he's a Hafiz, and he's an expert, he's got the ability of making statements in deen. In the old days, a lot of times it happens, even ulama that have qualified recently, in 1-2 years of experience, they will still say, hey, we don't know our stuff very well, and you rather go to that other alim. This is how they would work in that zamana. We have qualified now, we don't know the thing so well. Or if that alim wasn't practicing, in other words, practicing is not the one that is issuing verdicts and fatwas and masalas, etc. then he won't take a chance. You see, I learned, but I'm not in a position of giving fatwa, so you can refer to someone else. So he'll be true to himself. And he'll be true to others as well. Because, you know, it's not just a mundane thing, it's a deeni thing. It's a question of Jannat and Jahannam. It's a question of Iman and disbelief. Where he's going to lead the people to, see. So he needs to be very, very thorough in what he is doing. So many a times it is the person that is guiding, it's his fault. And many a time it is the fault of the person that is seeking guidance. Because the person that is seeking guidance, he is shopping around. This person is, or this mullah is very strict, this one is a little bit lenient, that is a little bit casual. Soon he'll make a plan for you, whatever you want, he'll make a plan for you, you go with him, see. So now it's a fault of on both ends, the person that is sought, the person that is seeking as well. So both ends you get a problem. In the Mughal Empire, you know, at that time, there were several periods in this Mughal Empire. One was Babur, Humayun, Akbar, then Jahangir. So at the beginning there wasn't too much of deen. You get the deen ilahi, you know, like how you have multi-religion. You know, you have multi-religion now. So that's the one also, you had something like that. But then came after Shah Jahan and Jahangir, Shah Jahan, and then Aurangzeb, then there was quite a bit of deen. There was quite a bit of deen. So then they saw that deen is being practiced. See, deen needs to be practiced both ends. One is you need to have people exhorting, like, you know, you have dawat, tabligh and dawat. So the crux of the tabligh and dawat is what? To exhort, to invite. With beauty, respect, but you exhort, you invite people towards Islam, towards deen. So that is one department in deen. Then you have another department of deen where you need to have people administering deeni affairs. See, so those that are administering deeni affairs, then they need to be people of strength, power and might. Right? If they don't have the strength, they don't have the power, they don't have that might and authority, then they won't be respected. And systems won't be respected, right? Like I can see now, people are robbing and cheating, right? So I only tell them, you know, by stealing, mustn't steal, must do an honest living. A lot of sawab you get for that. For honest living, and the sunnah is not the right thing. You think they're going to leave that out. So just the dawat won't be sufficient. The dawat will be effective. For that person that is level-headed, it will be good. But now you get this other type of people. That one you say in Urdu, you say, koi to baat ka aadmi hota hai, aur dusra to laat ka aadmi hota hai. Someone will hear your word. And someone, you have to be a little bit severe with him, right? So you'll get these two classes of people. In all times, you'll have someone that is soft. So you can have a soft approach. And someone that is very hard. So until he doesn't see أَنزَلْنَا الْحَدِيدِ فِي بَأْسٌ شَدِيدٍ, until you don't show him the strong arm of the law, man's not going to relent, not going to come right. So then here you need a little bit of force, you need a little bit of authority. So the man sees that authority, he won't take a chance. He's taking a chance because he feels that there is no authority. But when there is an authority, then is he going to take a chance? I want to take a chance. Like now in this country, for example, or nearly all the world today, right? There is no proper system in that regard, right? So therefore you'll find robbery, theft, corruption so rife and rampant because there is no system. So you'll be staying in your home and in your own house, then you have to have burglar guards, right? And with the burglar guard, you have to have a CCTV, right? For your own security, right? Then you need to have a dog as a patrol, right? Then you need to have an alarm system. Then you need to have some guns. nowadays a lot of youngsters are applying for guns because guns are becoming very easily available now. So then you have to have a gun. Then you're not comfortable with that only. Then you need to also have a patrol system. Some patrol system patrolling with the cars and all that. Then you need to have a police station, right? And then the surprising thing, on the police station you need another security. In South Africa it's happening. Yeah, the fact, I saw some police station and the security then collapses to such a level that if the municipality has to come and fix a light, you know, or some wire snapped, then they need to have a security for that as well. But you'll see it, yeah, it's bingo everywhere, you'll see it. So this is because you've got no system. No system and no authority to check on this thing here. But if there was an authority and there was some severity, even just in name, you know, you do this, no chance, we'll cut off your hand. Like in Makkah, Medina, Munawwara. So you'll see a jeweler, even now you saw when you went, jeweler, big jewelers, Namaz time, they take their own time. They're going for Qailula, resting and all that. So 2-3 hours they go and park off, they rest off. Right? And in front of their shop, they just got one veil, one cloth that's covering the front of the shop. Parking off, 2-3 hours coming nicely. The night also, they just leave it like that and they go on. There's no fear. A woman wants to come out, you see it up to this day, you see. She wants to come out about 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning to come and make tawaf or go for ziyarat. And there's no fear herself, she'll go out, she'll make a tawaf, whatever she needs to do, and she'll come back. Do a little bit of shopping she wants to do. All right. At that part of the morning, she's not frightened to do it. Now, there is some system. See? So the system then brings about this type of calmness, serenity, and peace. So in Islam, you need this both. In a proper state, you need this thing. You don't have the state, then you have a collapse. So people sometimes, we feel that no, only Dawat, and then this type of management and control and authority is not required. So this is also required, and this is also required. Right? Then this thing is complete. So we are talking of this Aurangzeb Alamgir's time, you know. Right. So there was a lot of control then. And there was a lot of control, so people were quite apprehensive. Okay. To make a mistake, you had it. There's no chance. Now it happened that a woman was involved for zina. Right. Now she's involved for zina now. What to do to get bailed out? Because there's no chance. Zina is a serious crime. And how do you get bailed out? So she's going to one Molana and the second one and the third one. Everything, there's no chance. You're going to be stoned to death. So like I to explain that you get people that are deficient as well. So in deen also you have deficiencies. But the failure is that we don't have on this department, we don't have a check and balance. This man, yeah, is he capable? Can he issue? Is he righteous? We don't have a check and balance, right? Like, even in other departments, like even in medicine in this day, there isn't the required amount of checks and balances. Like you see, Augustine is about the top hospital, right? Right? But up till recently, they were smuggling organs, right? The whole world knows about it. People that are close to the hospital, they know about it. That Augustine, the top hospital, right? But they were smuggling this thing here. Organs coming in here, there, from there, whatever they were doing, right? So, and then if you are even specialists also involved in major discrepancies, because now they got 20 patients, right? They got 20 patients. Each one is giving them 40,000, right? So they will attend to each one. So they will just see it from the surface, and they will hand it over to their nurses. You just do the rest of it. And the nurses, they're making a mess up of it. They're making a mess up of it. And there are cases where the person could have died. It's just that some family member had come in and he saved the situation. But there are reported cases like that as well. So there is nobody to check. Now it's gone more material, more commercialized. When it's commercialized, then it's what happens, you see. So you get this in medicine as well, but there is some type of checks and balance, some type. Not the one that is desired. But you get that more in deen, because in deen there is no checks and balance. If someone is doing something wrong, I told you, alright, you know, Zohar namaz, you did without wuzu, so your namaz is done, for example, right? So is there any court that can sue me for that? In this country, any court? No court can sue me. Perhaps now that Iraq, they got some khilafat there. They'll kill me perhaps, right? But here, you can't go and take the person to court, say, you know, he gave me wrong fatwa. So you need to penalize him. Can you say that? You can't say that. So there is no checks. So therefore, you find that type of distortion. Right? Now this is a blessing of this ummah that Allah Pak has promised. لَا يَذَلُ طَائِفَةٌ مِّنْ أُمَّتِي قَائِمِينَ عَلَى الْحَقِّ. There'll be a group that will be steadfast on the truth. Nobody will be able to stop them from their endeavor. They'll go on. So that's a blessing. So therefore you still see, with all the setbacks, but you see them still moving on. But nonetheless, you get these cases as well, where people create big problems, major problems they create. So this woman was involved for zina. And when she's involved for zina now, and she knows that she's going to be stoned to death, that's a punishment. So this punishment, Islamic punishment, sounds very severe. But the good of it, everybody wants to enjoy. Then you see everybody's daughter is safe and sound. Now, your own daughter is not safe and sound. Sometime in your own family's home is not safe and sound. Own family, and they are not safe and sound. Right? Because there's no law to check them. You know, you're getting this case of incest, you're getting the case of abuse, etc., right? Because there's hardly any law. Right? Now, we all agree that they need to be respected, women need to be respected. Right? We don't disagree on that. But when there isn't that type of law, and there isn't that type of system, then people get away. With murder, they're getting away. With any type of abuse, they're getting away. So why are they getting away? So there isn't that proper system, there isn't that proper law. Now when you got that Islamic law, like I showed you, that in those few countries, Makkah, Medina, Munawwara, you find a woman coming out 1 o'clock in the morning herself, she's going and doing some shopping, she's going to the haram, coming back, she's not worried about anything. Nobody's even eyeing her, nobody's checking her. Because they know, you're going to get involved in this, and they'll stone you to death. Right? Although they may not be practicing fully, right? But you have got that fear suspended on your head. Okay, I'm going to do this, they're going to stone me to death. Or you're going to interfere anybody's shop, any business or anything you're going to pick up, they may just amputate your hand, right? So I don't lose my hand. I came full house, I must go full house. Right? I don't want to go in pieces. So you got that mindset now, you know, you got that mindset, you're afraid. Although there's a lot of wealth thrown around, all strewn around. But a little bit of Islamic law is being so much of system. Anyway, this woman, she got involved in her wrong, and she knows now it's death. Now, to save your life, you'll do anything. So she went, like you got it today, fatwa shopping, you know. This one says haram, all right. If someone else will say, he'll make a plan for you, you know. Some Islamic banking and all that, they'll tell you, it's all right, they can work out a plan for you. Now, some of these people come here also, so there's major bank people came here, come here. One person came here, and he's a consultant for this whole region on the Islamic side, Islamic bank consultant. So he came of his own, I didn't invite him, of his own he came here. I asked him, you are a consultant for this region here. I asked him, do you know what's the definition of riba? He said, I don't know about it. How did they push you to this position of being a consultant for this entire region? So I got to imagine, now you're making a mess up. Then, even al-Baraka, more responsible people, they tell me, people that are long there, long there, from inception, they tell me that everything is in the book, but from the top to the bottom, there's hardly anybody that's applying the law. Because they came from a conventional bank, background, right? They came from that background. When they came from that background, they learned it to get a job here, right? Learned the Islamic law to learn. But how many are applying it? So they say there's very little that are applying it. So even these people that are so trusted, right? But they themselves, or at least about three or four of those people that are on the higher level, they came and told me, nobody applies it. So then it just becomes a farce. Then even the ambiance is not Islamic. You look in this, whether it's Al Baraka or West Bank or whatever, the ambiance is not Islamic, besides for the Arabic writing. They have an Arabic writing and they'll have some terms, Musharaka and all that. Right? But besides that, there is no Islam there. You'll see the front liners, you know, first serf. First serf is woman and half breast open, revealed. Now, is that Islam? Breasts are revealed, actually revealed, literally. And they are on the Islamic side. So who are they bluffing? Right? So it is just, we don't know sometimes whether the advertising for free wealth or free milk, you know. It's so deplorable, it's so disgraceful. Islamic side, and then how does it gel? It doesn't work out. Who are they bluffing? Anyway, be it as it may, like I said, because there is no checks and balance, right? So people are just doing things randomly. It's appeasing you, you're getting satisfied, so you're doing it. But really, is it Islamic? Is it deen, not deen? Nobody's bothered to really check into it. The reason why you're not bothered to check into it is because everybody was at high finance. I want this type of house, this type of motor car, this type of holiday. For that, you need that type of finance. If you don't have that finance, can you have that type of car? Can you have that type of home? Can you enjoy that type of holiday? Can your children have that type of education? You can't. So you want all that, then you'll have to go to these people. And then they'll make a monkey out of you. See? You want it. When you want it, so they'll make you dance. And they'll change things around. When they'll change things around, then they'll be using Islamic terminologies to take you to the wrong ends. So this system is not from now, it's from that zamana. That zamana. This woman I'm showing you, she's fatwa shopping now. I'm in now. I'm guilty for this, and I'm in for trouble. So what do I do? One Mawlana, she went, second one, third one. The fourth one said, all right, you see me right, I'll see you right. See right is not only for textile companies, clothing companies. They are not the only ones that do see right. Others also do see right. So this one said, you know, you see me right, I see you right. Well, how much they made the deal? Said, don't worry, I'll sort you out. See, my life is on the line. It's on the block. See, yeah. So what else I do? So he coached her, you know, he rehearsed her, prepared her. So you see, when you go for the trial, so this is what you must say. You must say this much. Okay, you know, I went, there was one bayan, so I was overhearing the bayan. And then Mullah said in the bayan, you know, are khabiso tum zina karte ho. Oh, you filthy people, you're making zina. Agar ek kafi na hai to do le lo. Agar do bas na ho to teen lo. Teen bas na ho to char lo. Lekin zina na karo. Filthy people, you're making zina. If one is not sufficient, take two. If two is not sufficient, take three. Three is not sufficient, take four. So now this woman is on the trial now. She's saying, you know, this is what I heard in the bayan. So one wasn't enough for me, so I took two. And it went to three. Now, the magistrate that is presiding, say, are badtameez, ye to mard ke liye, aurat ke liye nahi hai. This is for men, not for women. But anyway, they cautioned her and they threw the case out because yundaru bishubhat, yudra'u bishubhat. In legal matters, if there is some major discrepancy, there is some doubt, on account of the doubt, they give the guilty the benefit of the doubt. The guilty is given the benefit of the doubt. So in our dini matters, you have to be very, very cautious, very, very cautious. And especially in this day, it's like I say, it's a problem on both ends. Like this woman's case, you look at it, it's her problem as well. It's not just that Mulana's problem, it's her problem as well. Because she knows her line, her life is in the line. It's on the block. She went here and they told her that it's wrong, you will have to face this death sentence. But she's looking for, she's fatwa shopping. So because of her wrong intentions, right, she's also going to be sinful. And that person that is misleading her is also going to be sinful. أَفْتَوْ بِرَأَيْهِمْ بِغَيْرِ عِلْمٍ فَضَلُّوا وَأَضَلُّوا. They went and gave fatwas. Bukhari says one rewrite, بِرَأَيْهِمْ. Just with their own discretion. With their own discretion, they went and gave fatwas without knowledge. So they went astray and they led people astray as well. Now, here, we need to understand certain things. Sometimes, some person is specialized for a certain thing. When he's specialized for that, then you consult him only for the thing that he specialized. Not a general consultant. For what he specialized, you will speak to him. But it's a long story, I just cut it short. But I remember once I was called to one school. So this was in the beginning. And I was insisting on the students to come to me that they must have some type of an Islamic identity, whether topi, etc. They must do that. So anyway, the headmaster called me in high school. Okay, you've been insisting on your students that they must wear topis and all that, you know. So what is the position of a topi in Islam? Now, I knew who I'm talking to, right? He's a Hindu now, and I'm talking to him. So he doesn't know what is faraz, wajib, mustahab, makruh, haram, makruh, tahrim. He doesn't know all these things here. So I told him, you see, the position of a topi in Islam is like a position of a trouser in your religion. So sometimes you have to give it below the belt on the trouser, you see. So, puri magaj mein aata hai, then it comes into the brain box. If you don't, this, you talk very lightly, then they don't understand. So then he went and told me, you know, but we will refer to this person here. But he said it's an optional thing, you know. And he got his whole staff there, and they got a couple of Muslims now, Muslim teachers. They got them there as well. So yeah, we consulted so and so. Because I understand, we're in the education, so I know how the thing works. The teacher has to be good to the principal so that he will qualify for a promotion. If he's not good, then how can he qualify for a promotion? So uske haan mein haan milana padta hai. He has to say, ya bas, ya bas, ya bas. So that ya bas will give him a promotion. And if this person just writes him down, then he's demerited, right? He won't get that promotion. So it happens in all fields. So now they got that. So I'm thinking, hey, this is a difficult one because they got this Muslim teacher there, is teaching English and maths now at a high level, standard 9, standard 10. And it's a presence of one Hindu now, you know. So the Hindu will be our judge to say that who is right, who's wrong. I don't want him to be my judge. So I have to just circumvent the whole thing. I told him, see, the person that you're talking about, right, he is a specialist in comparative religion. Right? Now he knew his comparative religion, right, very well, and he was respected. So I couldn't ignore that as well. Because in his eyes, at that time, everybody was talking about comparative religion and Christianity, and this person is the authority. So in the eye of the non-Muslim, I couldn't lower this person as well. Although the fatwa that he had given was misleading, right? Not right. But in the eyes of the Hindu, I couldn't belittle this Muslim. So I tell him, see, in comparative religion, definitely he's an authority. If he asks you about, if he tells you about Christianity, then he's an authority in that. He will tell you something that is right. But in theological matters, he's not an authority. Now, to bring him, to put him onto the spot, you know, to put the teacher onto the spot, to give him an example, see, you are a teacher qualified to teach English, right? If you were to give advice on dentistry, right, they will say, hey, that's not your department, you just remain where you are. Your speciality is English, you must talk about that. But medicine or dentistry, although you know the language, although you can read up the books, but you're not an authority, you're not qualified to talk about this. So you remain in your place. So that whole topic just got buried, you see. So many times these things happen. It's not just one time. People take chance. You're qualified for something, you just remain to what you've been qualified and specializing for. Then you don't then extend yourself to other departments as well. Who is qualified for that? He will attend to that. You're not qualified for that, so you don't attend to that. You don't mix up issues. So this is what I'm saying. In this zamana, there is the one group that is misleading in this way, with just with their opinions, right? Now, one youngster gave me a book, Islamic Encyclopedia, Darussalam Publications, Jeddah, right? I must check through it. So I tell him, see, Darussalam is suspect, right? But sometimes, if we page through the whole book, we'll find one wrong. And because of that one wrong, they published that book. It may be a whole book, maybe 500 pages, but they got one thing wrong there. And for that one wrong, then they will sell you that book. And cheap, good pages, good paper, everything, quality paper, pictures, everything. Mufsa Rahmatullah explained once that he came across one book on Abdullah ibn Mas'ud radiallahu anhu, written by a Jew. Arabic, very beautiful, you know, like in like modern style, you know, there's a flow. You read it and you just want to continuously reading. There are some books, whether in English or other languages, but you want to read and you just continuously read because that flow is like that, you see. So this Jew is writing about Ibn Mas'ud radiallahu anhu, and he's writing about him as such a gentleman, such a great personality, and he was like the household of Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. And if you want to read the Quran Sharif as though it is just freshly revealed, and recite according to the recitation of Ibn Mas'ud, etc., etc. So says, I'm reading the book, but I'm thinking now, but you know, it's a Jew that's the author of this book. He's got nothing to do with Islam. So why is writing so greatly and highly about him? There must be some treachery involved here. There must be something, some underhand work. So as he read about 1,000 pages, one line he came across, you know, right, his ending about 900,000 pages. He writes there, all his virtues are on his place. غَيْرَ أَنَّهُ كَانَ وَضَّاعًا لِلْحَدِيثِ. It's a fact that he, نَعُوذُ بِاللَّهِ, he used to fake and forge hadith. Now, Mustafa said, see now, he had to bribe us with 900 or 1,000 pages for this one sentence. Now, with this one sentence, what happens? The respect and the confidence that you had for Ibn Mas'ud, it's all demolished, all smashed down, isn't it? All the virtues that you heard about him, do you attach any virtue to him now? Just one sentence demolished everything. Now, I was reading that kitab just now. There was these two Islamic encyclopedias. One is quite thick. So one of those encyclopedias was being sold by a nice mufti sahab, you know, reputable mufti sahab. He was selling it. So he left one copy here in the madrasa. I don't know, he left it or madrasa was, how it came to the madrasa, I don't know. I had some time available, so I paged through the whole thing. I paged to some sections. So I saw there was major discrepancy, not small, like Isa alayhi salam and what were they talking about. Absolutely wrong, baseless. Going directly against our beliefs. Absolutely against our beliefs. So I told that Mustaf, see, look at this page and look what's written here. Look at this page and look what's written here. See, I didn't know this was. I just looked at a couple of sections that all was looking nice. And I said, market ring. Everybody's buying this. I said, it's your responsibility. If people are going to take a wrong thing, it's your responsibility. So I didn't know about it. Now it's so difficult because the people is glossy, is very flowery language. There's a flow in the style. And you want to read the thing. Right? This other encyclopedia that someone gave me. So I pierced through it now. I'm thinking everything seems to be nice, right? Then look at the photos. You can see like a silhouette of Ibrahim alayhi salam. He got an axe breaking those idols. Right? So there's pictures there of a Nabi. Then I'm paging through again. Then he says, Tarawih namaz is only 11 rakats, 8 rakats and 3 rakats witr. Because Bukhari Sharif says this, you know. And they close the chapter like that. Ended the chapter in that manner. Now what happens to the normal person? What happens to him? Have you left him with the confusion or not? The confused state of mind or not? The normal person gets confused. He doesn't know, no? So now, but Bukhari Sharif said this. To understand Bukhari Sharif, you need to have quite a bit of preliminary education, right? Then you come to that. Now, most of the people that are quoting Bukhari Sharif, they can't read Surah Fatiha, right? Rather than to read Ha correctly, they can't read Ha. Qaf read correctly, can't read. Basic things, you know, very, very basic things they don't know. And then that Bukhari Sharif, what they are quoting is just a translation. Translation of one sentence. And then that sentence requires quite a bit of, besides the explanation, the context, right? If it's out of context, then the Quran Sharif can also be quoted out of context. The Quran Sharif says, لا تقربوا الصلاة وأنتم سكارى. When you intoxicated, don't come to namaz. So what will be the mafhum al mukhalif, the opposite, that you can come to namaz when you're not intoxicated. The only thing, the only wrong with intoxicants is you can't perform namaz in that state of intoxication. That means you can take it, but you must see that it's not at prayer times. That's what the meaning will be, isn't it? Now, if you look at this one verse in isolation, what happens? Then you'll take it to a wrong end. Now, this is what's happening. You're just looking at Bukhari Sharif, the Quran Sharif, anything, and it comes past your eyes and you... So I showed that person, I asked him, see, do you know any part of the world, where on a Jummah namaz, they only have one azan? You know, we have two azans. One before the imam and one before that, right? We have two azans. You know anywhere in the world, besides the Shias, right, that they have just one azan. So, no, everybody got two azans. So then I explained him, but do you know also, but in the time of Nabi Sassam, there wasn't two azans. The two azan came from the time of Usman al-Ghani radiallahu anhu. And from then, ever since till now, there is two azans. Right? So what's your answer there? So it's exactly the same, the style that we are doing Tarawih. Not that the Tarawih is not substantiated from the hadith, it's substantiated. But the style, into 20 rakats and reciting so much Quran, etc., that was from Umar radiallahu anhu's time. From that time till now, the Haramain has got the same style. The Haramain, that's like a Muslim standard, right? They have got the same standard running from that time till now. There wasn't any type of a lapse in that. There was no relapse in that. There was no interruption in that from that time till now. Now, what I'm getting at is this knowledge that is deficient. So sometimes a person is specialized in a certain field. So if he keeps just confined to his specialized, what he is specialized for, it's all right. But he mustn't extend himself beyond that. Like you get Yusuf Ali, you get, right? So he's a good translator. If you look at him, he's a very good translator. But he must just remain to the level of translation. He mustn't go beyond that. Because when he talks about riba, interest, then he says the economic debt, that's an invention of the modern bank system, you know, then this is not, doesn't come under the purview of riba. You know what he's saying? Economic debt that is the creation of the modern banking or conventional banks, then this is not riba. This is 100% riba. This is 100% riba, and he ruled it off. sort of, you know, I think like this, and this is my opinion, but keep your opinion to yourself. But this is not the view of those people that have specialized in fiqh. That's not your department. Your department was just to translate. If you translated and just left it to that point, it was all right. But you began to give a commentary where you were not qualified. So this is the problem that you create. And people will quote him, so now this is what Yusuf Ali says. But by Yusuf Ali, what is he an expert for? He's an expert for this translation. He's not an expert for fiqh or for hadith or Quranic commentary. He's not an expert for that. To give a commentary, you need some other thing. So he's not qualified for that. He's qualified for this. Now, that is what his limitation, that he didn't realize that I'm only qualified for a translation, I must just stick to that. And the problem of the readers is that they say, no, he's an authority in everything. He can translate the Quran Sharif, so he's good for everything. Quran, Hadith, theology, fiqh, everything. Then similarly, you get Yawar Beg, right? So he's a good motivational speaker. Motivation, very good, right? Business, do business like this, succession plan, all that, very good. But then fiqh is not his department, right? When fiqh is not his department, so when he's been consulted about fiqh, etc., then he's going to have major flaws. We'll say three divorces is one divorce. Now, this is running from Nabi Sam's time, from Umar Radiallahu's time, from Nabi Sam's time right from now. And now suddenly that three divorces became one divorce. Now, this was not his field. His motivational talker is very good. He must talk very good. That is his line, that's your line, you talk about that, but just stick to that. Don't extend yourself to these other branches. You're going to make a mess up and you'll make a laughing stock of yourself. So yesterday we were speaking about the precaution of the tongue, you know. Sheikh Sadi said this, you see. In Gulista, he says, there was one person known for his silence. So the people used to flock to him from everywhere, all parts of the world used to come to him. Very pious philosopher of the time, silent, everything, feel nice feelings and all around. So now he's attracting a lot, huge crowds. One day he thought to himself, you know, that I'm attracting such big crowds, you know, with my silence. Let me talk today. Let me talk something today. The moment he spoke for about 10 minutes, that whole crowd that was there for years, all dispersed. All right, hey, what a stupid nut here we got here. What are you stuck for? So his true colors only came out. So this type of people, if they stick to their field, right, then it's all right. But beyond the field, if they go and extend themselves, then they're going to make a laughing stock of themselves. But if the crowd themselves are a laughing stock, then who'll laugh at who? The crowd that is talking, we also are jahils. And who they're referring their matters to is also a jahil. So now, this person is misled, and who is going to talk to is also misled. So who knows who's in what waters? So sometimes you just look to that person from one dimension. And because he's qualified in one dimension, therefore we feel he is universal. Yes, where the credit is supposed to be given, we give the credit. The credit is given, supposed to be given, we give the credit. He's definitely a good motivational talker. But just keep it to that. But beyond that, then, are you an expert? Are you specialized for this? If you're not specialized for it, then keep quiet. Then refer you to someone that is specialized. Because the crowd, what happens to the crowd? They feel, no, you're a motivational speaker, you speak very well, so you qualify to speak on these issues as well. That's how the common person thinks. And then he's misled. He doesn't have that expertise in deen, the reasoning, the counter-reasoning. He doesn't understand. When he doesn't understand, then he's definitely going to be misled. Now, sometimes I have to speak about the names as well. You know, and speaking about the name, you talk of Imam Bukhari rahmatullahi alayh, they say from the time that he knew ghibat was haram, he never made ghibat, right? But then he spoke against the deviant groups by name, Jahmiyyah and all. He took the names and the deviant groups and he had to speak about them. Rasulullah Pak Sassan was receiving one guest, see. So Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam says to Aisha radiallahu anha, "Bi'sa akhul ashira." It is a terrible person, this person here. before he can come. And when he comes in, then فَأَلَانَ لَهُ الْقَوْلِ Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi spoke to him in a very gentle, respectable manner. So Aisha radiallahu anha was a very intelligent woman. She is an alim of this ummat. I don't know of any woman who was as educated as Aisha radiallahu anha. Nabi Sallam also liked her very much because of her understanding and other virtues. Very understanding, very capable woman. What other woman couldn't pick up, she picked up, you see. So she asked her, Nabi Sallam, you know, just now you spoke this about the person, when he came in, then you showed so much of consideration. So Nabi Sallam explained, see, did you ever see me to be aggressive? I'm not aggressive. But he had to warn Hazrat Aisha. Why to warn Hazrat Aisha? If, for example, she was not warned, right? So Hazrat Aisha would have taken this person to be a very good person. Tomorrow, if there was a need to make a recommendation for a nikah proposal, etc., then what would she have said? Hey, Nabi Sallam had shown him a lot of respect, a lot of regard, so he's a great person. Right? So she had to be pre-warned. Now this doesn't come under the purview of ghibat. Whether the person is wrong and is misleading, whoever it is, whether it's Yusuf Ali, Beg Sahib, whoever it has to be pointed out that these people are deviant groups. When they are deviant groups, now the masses, they just go by whatever they hear. Like they say, al-anam kal-an'am. Right? Well, I don't want to give the translation because everyone will feel bad just now. So they can't, they don't have the level of understanding because they don't have the capacity. And they don't have the capacity, now you drive them to whichever end you want. And you get a person from whom you hear what you want to hear. You hear from him what you want to hear. Now, for example, now you find this type of modernists, right? They're talking to crowds, women, but very casually. The woman is sitting there, and very casually they are talking. Okay. Now, is that in accordance to Islamic ethos, I ask you? Okay. Is that in keeping with Islamic standards? Cool, you're casually discussing, joking, all that. Now, is that right? Okay. Now, this is simple for us to understand, but no. Person is talking like this, so he's great. Everybody talks about himself as well. Look at the personality. فَانْزُرُوا أَمَّنْ تَأْخُذُونَ دِينَكُمْ You must see who you're acquiring your ilm from. It's not just information that is so cheap. Deen is not a cheap thing. You must be thorough of the information, personality that is between you and Allah Ta'ala. You must be thorough about the person. You can't just go and take randomly from anybody and everybody. The person is thorough, he's got that fear of Allah Ta'ala. He's got that consciousness and awareness of Allah Ta'ala. Definitely you must refer to him. Now look at an authority like Imam Malik Rahmatullah Alayh. They call him Imam Udarin Hijra, right? What a leading personality, even the government of the time, they refer to him. So you can imagine the person, how great he is. But in one-on-one setting, many a times it used to be, they ask him questions and say, La Adri, La Adri. Sometimes in one sitting, 40 times, 30 times, I don't know it. I don't know this. I don't know this. Now, this is a sign of a real expert, a real specialist. He is not embarrassed to say that I don't know this. It's like a person who's got tons of respect, right? For him to give away a couple of ounces, not a problem. It's because he's got so much of respect. But if that person has got just a couple of ounces of respect, then if he gives a, what he'll be left with? He's got, Imam Malik has got so much of respect, he's got so much of honor. 1-2 ounces gives a, doesn't make a difference. Right? But people like us got 1 ounce, 2 ounce. If we give that away also, then what's going to happen? No face will be left with, you see. So these are aspects that we have to be very, very careful. There's a lot of this type of speakers coming around, books, internet sites, etc. And very easily people are getting misled. And the more damaging thing is that many people are getting misled even in their basic beliefs. They believe, no, I read it, I know about it. You don't come and tell me what it is. I read about this thing here. So any speaker, any book, any site, we can get into and take the information ourselves, and then suddenly we become experts. See? When we started off as this tariqat and shariat, you know, right? And this where we branched off, where we came to. But anyway, this is a topic on its own, tariqat. I explained that people, sometimes it's deficient ilm, naqis. And this major catastrophe in deen is because of this deficient ilm. The ilm is not perfect, not sound. And nor do I have the heart to go and find out. You know, if I'm deficient, I must find out. I mustn't pretend to be knowing it. If the malaika did feel ashamed, when they didn't know it, they said, Subhanaka la ilma lana illa ma 'allamtana. Didn't they say, we don't know it? They didn't feel shameful. Jibreel, Mikael, Israfil, Israel, all, you know, the greatest of creation after the Anbiya, the greatest of creation. But for a moment they didn't feel ashamed, embarrassed to say, we don't know it. Can you imagine, greatest of creation, people that brought wahi to the earth, they were the messengers to convey Allah's messages to the Anbiya. And they say, no, la ilma lana, we don't know, we don't know it. So is it anything to feel ashamed about? It's something to take chance. Deen is a thing to take a chance in. Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam at times would say, la adri. He was asked, ayyul buqa'i afdal, which spot of the earth is the most virtuous and significant? La adri. Bayhaqi and Tabrani, this hadith comes there. I was looking where this hadith comes. Tabrani and Bayhaqi has got this hadith. Ayyul biqai afdal. And he said, la adri, straight, clear, I don't know it. So he didn't feel ashamed. Imam Malik rahmatullahi in one sitting, 40-50 times to say, la adri, I don't know it. He didn't feel ashamed. But today's Musliman, he is more smart than Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, more than the Malaika, more than Imam Malik. He knows everything. There isn't a thing that he doesn't know. Everything he can speculate, he can talk from his discretion. He doesn't know. He forgot la adri. Therefore, Imam Malik, or it was Imam Abu Hanifa rahmatullahi, he instructed his students that you teach your students to say la adri. Must actually instruct them, teach them to say that we don't know it. Don't take a chance. You don't take a chance at all. Even for 1 second, don't take a chance. I don't know it. Khalas. How many of us have that heart to retract? You know, that person must be very Allah Ta'ala conscious to retract. He made a mistake, he slipped up, so I want to come and tell you people that I slipped up, I made a mistake, and this is the correct view. So how many people have got that? Sometimes it happens, when I've given my opinion, then I'm strong on that, and I don't want anybody to come and challenge me. Anybody challenge me, then I want to smash him down. So how many of us are like that, they talk to us, they discuss, they say, all right, let me think about it. And then when I've given it a thought, I feel I'm wrong, I'll come and announce it in public, but I'm wrong, and I retract my previous statements. So this is only a person who's got that level of dini consciousness and awareness. He will do it. He will say it. I don't know it. Otherwise now, the knowledge is deficient, or sometimes it happens that the definitions are wrong. You don't have the right definition. You don't understand that. When you don't have the definition, how are you expected to understand it correctly? Like I just showed you one example, simple example. Habbatu sawda shifa'un min kulli da. But how this person translated it? What a mess up he made up. See? So the same happens with tariqat and shariat, etc. They don't know the definition. And the third problem in this day is the problem of redefining, reinterpreting. One is like, you know, deficiency, and one is everybody tries to be an expert. And the third is to redefine and reinterpret. Same words of the Quran or the Hadith, but it's redefined, right? Now this redefining also started from that zamana. In the wording of the Quran, this redefining is called ilhad. What is ilhad? The short of ilhad is deen ke naam se baddini ki taraf logo ko bulana. What? Deen ke naam se, to use deeni words to lead people away from deen. What? Using deeni words to lead people away from deen. But what words, what pretexts is used? The pretext of deen to mislead people. So you will use deen, but to do what? To mislead people. So using deeni words, like you say, musharaka, murabaha, what the person knows, he doesn't know anything. He doesn't know something. Big Arabic word, he knows his stuff because he gives a big Arabic word. But what it is all about, he doesn't know. Right? Now this also started from the old. Right? Just to show you where it started off. Most of you all are aware of Paul, right? So he was the first person that redefined Christianity. Right? You know, in the Bible you have Paul, Matthews, all this thing here. So this Paul was actually Saul, and then he converted to Christianity so that he could redefine the scriptures. Now, how he redefined the scriptures? So that's why I say, in deen, don't take a chance. But I don't know it. Let me refer someone. So he wanted to mislead Christians altogether because he says, I've seen Jesus and I opposed him. What he's saying is the truth. But if Jesus, what he's saying is the truth, that means we all are going to be roasting and toasting in Jahannam. So why must we be all singled out in Jahannam? If we are going to be in Jahannam, then let's take the whole Christianity also to Jahannam. Lock, stock and barrel, everybody must go in. Like how Shaitan said, لَأَمْلَأَنَّ جَهَنَّمَ مِنْكُمْ أَجْمَعِينَ, that I'll fill Jahannam with all you people. Because of you, I got thrown out. Adam, because of you people, I got thrown out. So all your progenies, I'll take you out to Jahannam. So the Shaitan, Martane, he's not dying. And he is got his agency as well. They saw someone, saw Shaitan is resting. One of those parks, you know, botanical gardens, he's resting one way, got his pipe, and he's smoking cigar and all that. So why are you resting here? What's wrong? You're supposed to be misleading the creations. Hey, I got so much of agencies now. They're just carrying on now. Better than I could do the stuff. They're doing it for me. So the agencies are running. They haven't closed. So now, his work then was to redefine so that he could mislead the Christian under the name of Christianity, but to mislead. Just one simple example. They asked Paul, what about pork, you see? So he gave an explanation, you see. You people are more worried about what goes inside. You know, the more important thing is what comes out from the tongue. See, now that thing is a top philosopher, man. What he's talking about? Yeah, it's right, man. You know, what comes out from the mouth must be right, you know, clean, nice, good words. What goes inside is one of those things. You know. So that one statement was a fatwa to then legalize pork. This one statement. You see, there's redefining. But how sharply and how smartly he did it. That the whole pork became halal. Now, the modern Christian priests, they say it's halal. Why they say it's halal? Although the scripture says haram. They say because, you see, it was forbidden, it was taboo. Why it was taboo? Because of its filthy nature. But now, under modern hygienic conditions, they are reared up. Very hygienic conditions. Very, very hygienic and pure, clean standards. So because of the unhygienic system that prevailed then, therefore it was declared haram. Now because of the hygienic, clean, pure systems that exist now it's definitely permissible, now it's kosher, now you can eat it. See, deen ke naam se baddini ki taraf. So within like they say, ta'lil fi muqabalatin nas, where there is a text. The text, you can't then find a counter reason to the text. The text says something, then you just go by the text. You don't counter reason that. So how they went and demolished Christianity is to go and counter the text, but with some smartness, some beauty. Like when this Yavor Beg, when he spoke about three divorces and one siyah, he said, no, you know, disuniting the ummah and breaking and dividing and all that, you know, and then we become a laughing stock amongst the rest of the people. So now this type of an argument appears to the public, that we become a laughing stock in front of the whole universe, in front of all the people. We're disuniting the ummah, so we'd rather be together, you know. So we don't break up, we don't divide ourselves. Someone said it, and he said it in emotion, etc. So we try and overcome this because the unity of the ummah is a greater thing to work for. So you see, under the pretext of deen, but where are you taking people to? Allah Pak Tawfiq Naseeb Kare, get us to understand things and understand things in perspective.
Now we'll discuss some sunnahs and adab with regards to performing wudu. That when a person performs wudu, then he will first sit facing towards the qibla, sitting on a raised seat or platform, and then you would make the niyat for the wudu, that whether it is to gain taharat so that you will be able to perform salah, etc. And then at the beginning of wudu, you will recite bismillah or bismillahi walhamdulillah. And the hadith teaches us that a person who recites bismillah at the beginning of wudu, then as long as he remains in the state of wudu, the malaika will continuously record thawab and reward for that person. And then a person would commence the wudu by washing his hands thrice, both his right hand and his left, up to the wrist. Then you would make miswak of the mouth. That miswak would be made of the teeth as well as the tongue. Miswak of the teeth would be made horizontally, sidewards, starting off from the right side and brushing the teeth, moving on to the left side of the mouth. And miswak of the tongue would be made vertically, moving it upwards and downwards. And in this way, you would brush the teeth to the miswak. And the fazilat of the miswak is that when a person makes wudu and makes miswak at the time, then the namaz that he would read thereafter, the thawab of it would be multiplied by 70 times. And then you would gargle the mouth thrice, taking three handful or scoops of water. And when gargling the mouth, you would gargle the mouth thoroughly, allowing the water to reach all areas of the mouth, right to the back of the mouth where the throat begins. And obviously, if a person is fasting, then he will not take the water so back, because there is a fear that the water may go down his throat. And in this case, the roza and the fast would break. So in fasting, a person would be a bit cautious when gargling his mouth. Then again, you would take water and place it into the nostrils thrice, three scoops of water. And here again, a person would place the water into his nostrils, allowing it to reach just to where the soft part of the nose ends and where the bone begins. And if a person has the need to clean his nose, then he would use his left hand to clean his nose. Then you would wash the face thrice, taking three handfuls of water. And when washing the face and taking the water, you will not take it and just splash it and throw it against the face. But a person would gently take the water and you would pour it from the top of the face, allowing the water to run down, and whilst it's running down, you will then take your hands and rub the water to ensure that the entire face is made wet. And the border of the face is from the hairline of the forehead to the chin at the bottom, and from one earlobe to the other. And if a person has a thin beard, meaning the skin can be seen through the hair, then one needs to ensure that the skin is also made wet. Person cannot just suffice with wetting the outer beard and leaving the skin, but the skin also needs to be made wet. But if a person has a thick beard, that where the skin cannot be seen through the hair of the beard, then a person will just wash the outer portion of the hair when he's washing the face, but he would also make khilal of the beard after washing the face thrice. And khilal of the beard would be made by taking a handful of water, placing it at the bottom of the beard, and then passing the right hand from the back towards the front. And in this way, khilal would be made. Thereafter, you would wash both the hands, the right hand first thrice, from the fingertips to the elbows. And again, when washing, you would wash the hand to ensure that no place is left dry. You would wash the right hand first thrice, and likewise you would then wash the left hand. And then you would make khilal of the fingers, passing the fingers of the left hand through the fingers of the right hand, and likewise passing the fingers of the right hand through the fingers of the left hand. Then you would wet both the hands before making masah of the head. And masah of the head would be made by placing both the hands entirely at the beginning of the head, and then drawing them back, covering the entire head right to the nape. And in this way, masah would be done just once. Then you would make masah of the ears. And masah of the ears would be made using the index finger to wipe the inside of the ear, and using the thumb to wipe the outside of the ear, the back of the ear. And then you would make masah of the nape using the front of the hand, of the fingers. And masah would only be made of the nape and not of the neck. The neck, it is makruh to make masah of the neck. And lastly, you then wash both the feet, first the right foot and then the left foot thrice. And you would wash up to the ankles, and you would make khilal of the toes using the small finger of the left hand, commencing from the small toe of the right foot and ending off at the small toe of the left foot. And during the wudu, you would recite the masnoon dua, Allahumma ghfir li dhanbi wa wassi' li fi dari wa barik li fi rizqi. And whilst making wudu, a person should not engage in any worldly talk and any worldly discussion. And likewise, he should not waste water, but rather he should just use the bare minimum. Obviously, he mustn't use so little that he is unable to fulfill the sunnahs of wudu, but he must also not overuse and waste the water. And upon the completion of the wudu, you would recite the shahadatain, Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah wa ashhadu anna Muhammadan abduhu wa rasuluh. And then you would recite the dua, Allahumma ja'alni min at-tawwabin wa ja'alni min al-mutatahhirin. And the hadith explains that the person who recites the shahadat after performing wudu, then the virtue of this is on the day of Qiyamah, he would be granted the opportunity of entering Jannat from whichever door of Jannat he wishes to enter from. And then it is also mustahab and preferable that upon the completion of the wudu, if a person is allowed to perform salah at that time, if it is not makruh time, then a person should perform two rakats of tahiyyatul wudu upon the completion of the wudu.